Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Tim Cook predicts big business for Apple. Tech companies band together to stop Trump. And Ben Affleck's no longer Batman. Directing Batman. That's all. Bye.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Oh, man.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Lionize the great.
Yes, sir.
Black History Month.
Yes.
As a Godfather of hip-hop.
That's right. That's right. Mr. Gil Sky Heron. One of my favorites. You will not be able to stay home, brother. That's what I always say. I love Gil Scott, and I love this song. And
one of my favorite artists of all time,
yeah,
of all genres.
Yeah,
very inspirational to me as within my own artistry.
Yeah.
Gil Scott is the best.
Also, the diversity from the spoken word, if you will, which is revolutionary for the spoken word / rap. Pre-rap,
right.
The jazz,
the singing,
the playing,
all of that.
Like
shout out to Brian Jackson.
Yeah, like all the stuff we talk about. You know about Gordon Parks being able to like have the ability to express yourself through whatever tools they're put in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So I like he's dope. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. We're starting Black History Month today, so there's that. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined as always by Mr. Akili Shine. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man, and I'm happy that we're in the month of February to be talking about our history and culture and things that have influenced us.
Yep.
Shout out to Carter G. Woodson. When Black History Month was just Negro History Week and expanded out to Black History Month, but we all know that Black History is 365 days a year. So
yes.
I'm just happy that, I'm really excited about this year just in terms of content that we can build and where technology is and how we share information. And because we're in a protest environment, I think it'll be a great learning opportunity for a lot of young people.
Oh, agree. That is well said. I want to I'm sorry, Marissa, I'm going to skip that first story because I missed it somehow. We're going to jump right into the Microsoft. Yeah, I want to talk about this immigration ban. Joe Trump and his boy Steve Bannon have written this executive order, very sloppily written, not very legally thought out executive order to do a legal Muslim ban, as Rudy Giuliani calls it, he's calling a immigration ban instead of a Muslim ban.
Right,
but Christians are allowed. Christians,
right?
Are allowed. But he's getting a lot of blowback, not only from federal judges, up to four federal judges right now, but tech companies are surprisingly, and companies are surprisingly saying no to this, and not withstanding, because you think about Microsoft and Google and all some of these other places, they're filled with people with green cards and filled with immigrants and filled with all these folks. And so I don't know. I mean, talk about not thinking this through. But Amazon has a lawsuit. Microsoft is now joining them with a lawsuit, and this is a big deal, right?
Super big deal, man. I think it's great that we have Silicon Valley and tech companies, enforcing some type of policy change incorporated with their business pursuits. I think a corporation, a company, organization should have a high degree of social responsibility, and to use their influence to speak for those that don't have a platform or those that are marginalized. And so I like that, some of these companies are being more vocal in their position against some of the policies that are being made in the Trump administration, and also just putting their flag kind of in the soil of where they stand with us as a people. And like you said, a lot of these companies source their talent from overseas, and so they're fighting for not only their employees and their rights, but also just the concept of what America's supposed to represent.
Right.
So.
It's fantastic, and you can't really. I mean, it's one thing you can't have the company without some of this sort of. It's industry giants, and then these are the industry giants. Actually, moving on.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that a lot of this? I mean, we talk about all the time when Facebook takes certain positions, mm-hmm. that it's a PR move. Do you think for some of these companies, it's exactly that, or do you think it's genuine and they're really trying to use their voice to make a change?
I think it's genuine. I think they're really trying to use their voice to make a change. I think that. I think it. If anything, it could be a if you want to get super hyper cynical about it, you could say it's a PR move within your own company. Like I'm looking out for you, immigrants, you know, or folks in my company. I'm going to sue that guy Trump, like to let them know that you're on their side. It could be more of that. I don't know if it's an outward facing PR move. Like, look how great we are, because it's really, this is something that actually genuinely threatens the, you know, if Microsoft or Google had, you know, a third of their people deported or leave the country and can't come back, that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean,
so, it's hurting their pockets.
Yeah, it threatens their creative output.
Yeah, and threatens their money. So yeah. I don't know that. It's definitely more of a business decision. I think it's more of a business decision than a moral decision, but I like that they can hide behind that. They can say it's a moral decision.
Right, I mean? I agree with that completely.
So I'm not mad at it either way. And look, You know, Bill Gates is pretty, you know, is pretty outspoken on these matters. So I would like to believe that he's on the right side. He's no Peter Thiel, you know. He's on the right side of the stuff. So I not that Bill Gates is running Microsoft still, but I just, like, you know. But speaking of which, Airbnb is another tech company who is doing some things. Sort of saying that, like, saying that it's a policy that they've. The CEO, Brian Chesky of Airbnb, is like sitting on this sort of email or sort of this thing, sort of saying that a policy his people profoundly disagrees with. It's a direct obstacle to their mission at Airbnb.
Right.
Like we believe that you should be able to travel and live in a community all around the world. The whole Airbnb thing is like, we're a world community.
Right.
And not like, oh, let's separate this stuff. And I think this is really interesting, you know, kind of that mix of, this is a really perfect mix of PR and company mission and actually and sort of doing the right thing, and that, like, he's really holding onto the fabric of, like, what his company is built on is antithetical to what Trump is trying to do, but at the same time he's also sort of be able to big up his company and his mission by opposing Trump. We always seem cynical, like everything's a PR stunt, but I think this is kind of dope.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think it is a blend of both, but I like some of the initiatives that Airbnb is enforcing in terms of, like, even with how they're supporting certain refugee camps overseas. Right. We're saying, hey, if there are tourists that come into, you know, your area or your country, Airbnb will essentially employ you to give them tours, you know, yeah, and to be able to put more finance into your infrastructure. And so I like the fact that they're coming up with creative ways to be able to kind of funnel the money and channel, you know, opportunities for others. But I think it's dope. And I mean, Airbnb as a concept is exactly that, though.
Yep.
So I think it's a perfect way for them to be vocal about this. I applaud them. You know, I really don't have anything critical to say about it.
I don't either. I think it's fantastic. I think that it's a good way to, again, these tech companies, man, you can't really fuck these tech companies like that. I defy Trump to be like, Microsoft, overrated. Google, garbage. Airbnb, terrible. Like, I mean, he can't, you know. I mean,
yes, he can.
He will, but, like,
exactly.
At a certain point, the list of people that are garbage and terrible
is going to be everybody
and
trash on the list.
Everybody, and over here is him and Steve Bannon.
Right.
You know, so, at a certain point, it is what it is, you know. Moving on, now, you know, Google's, our friends at Google are also joining in the fight, but they're doing a little more. They're sort of putting their money where their mouth is and mm-hmm. created a $4 million crisis fund to fight this immigration ban, which is, mm-hmm. you know, again, that's couch cushion money for Google, but still, that's fantastic, right?
100%. It's very fantastic. I mean, $4 million is a considerable amount of money in terms of galvanizing resources for people that can't afford to pay for a lawyer. I think that it just helps the transition and the leveraging of their rights to be able to come, you know, for the rights to be enforced. And so I like the fact that they are doing that for their employees. Again, another company, another example of another company taking a strong stance against these policies. And the fact, that they're putting literally their money where their mouth is, I think is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think that Google, their mantra is do no evil.
Right.
And so they're definitely in strict opposition to the Trump administration. So yeah. This is very dope. Let's see how this thing works out. Mm-hmm. Again, moving on, just kind of blown through all these immigration stories, because now there's been controversy with Uber, because the Uber CEO has been meeting with Donald Trump and whatnot. And so he's already put out a statement sort of saying that, look, you know, we've got to work with the president. I'm just trying to work with the guy, you know. But Lyft saw that opportunity and really jumped on that and let everyone know that, hey, man, we don't like Donald Trump, so you can use us. And it's kind of working. It's working right. Already. It was already kind of working. But now they people have doubled down, and they've got a hashtag delete Uber, and celebrities are on board, and it's kind of spreading.
Yeah, it's definitely spreading.
Do you think Uber's in trouble?
I think that the perception around Uber is going to shift, and perception is everything, especially in our brand-centered society. So I think it could definitely position a company like Lyft or a company like Moovin, which is a black-owned company. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
But to help leverage them to have a greater market share. And so I like the fact that Lyft took that position to juxtapose, you know, kind of Uber's maybe like a greedy intention, because how it all evolved was that the taxi association said, we're not going to essentially drive to the airport. And so Uber said, well, we'll still do it,
right.
But we won't utilize our surge option. And so people felt that was pretty exploitive. And you know, taking advantage of the situation, because obviously people need to be picked up from the airport. But
right.
The whole point is to, you know, build awareness. And so I think that they could have took a stronger position. But I don't know if you caught the article about the Uber CEO. He kind of was like Nino Brown in New Jack City. He started pointing out everybody who was on that board, on Trump's board. It's not just Uber that's on the board.
Right.
It's blah 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 blah. Like. It's not just me. Like, really?
Nino
Brown. That's
shameful.
Nino Brown.
Oh, man. My brother's keeper. Yeah. I think this is great. I think that it works for a couple of reasons. I think from a capitalist standpoint, and like a sort of just a, you know, a business standpoint, biz competition. Listen, like, Uber was dominant and was gigantic. And what happens, you see these, when these companies get so big, the question is, what do you do? Do you start to exploit stuff because you dominate the market share, or do you try to sort of like make things better? Uber got big and they started muscling folks. They started like under the guise of, we're going to help some, but they're doing some muscle. So the fact that there is even a Lyft or a Moovin or any of the places that to offer a competition for the people who are like strong arming, I think is fantastic. So that's the first thing. I think Uber, you know, you get a little too big for your britches, if you will, and then, you know, you can get, if there's competition, you can get taken over by the little guy. That's the first thing.
Right.
And then the second thing of this is, yeah, like, look, there's plenty of ways that you can voice your dislike and unhappiness with this president, with his administration, with his policies. I mean, obviously the first is your vote, you know, these economic ways, we have power. Like, you know, economic power, we as in consumers, we as in black folks, we have economic power. We power a lot of stuff. So if we choose to say we are not going to do that, we're going to do this, that means something.
Definitely means something. And I think it speaks to the character of the people. And I think that's what's most important here. Because, I mean, when you look at Uber and the functionality of Uber as a company, I mean, they are the best. Like, the app is the best. The way, you know, they were the ones to really, you know, break ground on that.
Sure.
So I think you could really affect change, but it really starts with the character of the people, because sometimes it's harder to support the business that's on the other side of town,
right,
you know, versus the business that's like literally across the street from you. So I think that we have to make those sacrifices and take a stronger position on the companies that we support.
I agree.
Because it's so easy just to still use the Uber app, you know?
Right, I agree. I must say, I confess, I've kind of been, I think I'm like 80% off of Uber, and it was by accident because I had a problem with Uber apps. I started using Lyft, and now I use Lyft now. So now I don't know if I'll go back. We'll see.
Yeah, man. And just a quick anecdote: like, I was traveling actually during, you know, the protests at the airport, and literally they shut down the bottom floor, the lower level, like people all in the street. Like, I was at the airport for almost 3 hours waiting for transportation.
Oh, wow.
But I love the fact that it promoted conversation and it's building awareness. Like, my inconvenience tax and everyone's inconvenience tax is just really helping to foster more conversation and to bring awareness to these issues. And I love the fact that protesters took such a bold stance to do that.
Yeah.
So just want to put that out there.
No, that's a great, great point. I love the way of looking at that as the inconvenience tax, because, you know, what out of that inconvenience comes some really important dialogue and really important things that you may otherwise not have been able to have, or these people may have not otherwise been able to interact. And exactly. Who knows what comes out of that? Exactly. Who knows what lessons are sort of learned and what the takeaways are? Which is the point of the disruption? Right. Which is the actual point of the disruption?
Right.
So it's good to see that stuff work in real time. 3 hours, damn.
Yeah. That's 3 hours.
That's just waiting. That's no joke. Like looking at the app. That's no joke. All right. So moving on out of the politics, the political stuff, and kind of into the tech stuff of Uber. We reported a while back that Uber sort of joined forces with Mercedes. We're starting to see how that is starting to pay dividends for them, and they're really starting to use that alliance to help power their self-driving situation. And they've already had that deal with Volvo that they're testing, but something about the Mercedes-Benz situation is able for them to reach out globally and do some stuff. I don't know. How do you feel about the self-driving car situation?
I mean, yeah, we cover this all the time, man. I think, you know, the faster there's policy implementation to correlate, you know, catch up with the technological innovation, I think we'll see more of this happening. But Uber, you know, as a company, to be able to do this, to make this transition from, hey, now we don't even have to share, we don't have to have any rev share now, because we don't have to pay drivers, we have, you know, the autonomous vehicles, we just do a deal with, you know, a car manufacturer.
Right.
They use our, you know, software, they use our GPS functionality and all the things that we've built and all the analytics that we've collected, and now we're able to you know, essentially increase our profits.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that is a smart move for them as a company. I mean, we talk about all the time, you know, in news about how automation is going to affect employment. So I'm just kind of on the fence about, you know, where I stand. Like, would it be convenient for me as a consumer to hop in a car that's autonomous? But what does that mean to my cousin who's actually a driver for Uber or a Lyft? You know,
this is also the ongoing sort of question about progress, which is convenience versus, how much do we care about the convenience? Like, this is very convenient for me.
Right.
10 people want me out of the job, but shit, I ain't gotta wait for it, you know. Exactly. I mean, I wonder how we think about that. It's just interesting to me.
Right. We don't think about it until it affects us directly, which
right.
is shameful.
It's just shameful. And speaking of which, you know, Google's got this, the Google's testing these robots that actually learn. They're this thing, a Go playing machine teaches robots how to learn through trial and error.
Right.
And this is huge when we talk about automation and talk about the threat of automation. And this is kind of like, you know, I'm a big Tom Friedman guy, New York Times, Tom Friedman, and he's, you know, his books are all about globalization. He has a new book out about this now, but this talk about on the Trump side of all these jobs leaving for overseas, mm-hmm. and then bringing them back to America. The truth of that is, these jobs may very well come back to America, but they will be all automated.
Right.
The thought that they will come back all to America and then they're going to hire 100,000 workers is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the Trojan horse.
You know, so he will, like, so the reason why you're able to have them overseas is because obviously there's labor issues.
Cheap
labor. So you bring all these jobs back, you're not going to be able to hire, and this is why they also want a low minimum wage, but like, you cannot bring these jobs back and pay American wages. What is happening though at a high rate is the automation is getting amazing and better and better and better. And this Google thing, you know, you have these arms, these robots who are actually learning on the fly how to open doors.
Right.
The video is quite amazing. It has like four robot arms together, and one tries one, and the other one another thing. And by the fourth one, he's like clunk clunk.
Yeah.
And they're all sharing that information. So it's like, you know, it's a weird thing. So you think about that through a giant factory.
Yeah.
How one person goes, oh, here's the best way to put the screw in.
Right.
And then everyone knows it.
Right.
We all know how to put the screw in.
Right.
The stuff about that is terrifying to me. That is on some Terminator 2 shit.
Man, it's Skynet, it's Skynet for sure.
Skynet.
But it's inevitable, man.
Here's the best way to kill a human.
Hey, we've talked about this since, I think, day one of this show, technological singularity, where, you know, the AI will come to a point in its ability to be able to recreate itself or to be able to think for itself. And so these type of technologies, even though they're in the very infancy of their execution, they're actually doing that. Like, okay, like you said, the example you gave, how to open a simple task like opening a door. So they fail the first three times, but then over the course of maybe a dozen times, now they've mastered it. And now, like you said, now they've transferred that mastery over to another AI.
Just like that.
Like, so once those simple tasks become now complex, like, that's when it's really going to get crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, like, yeah, like, I go straight to, like, what's the best way to kill a human? How fast we, like, you know. And now, like, people say, oh, this is work for, like, surgery, and they'll know exactly what the best way to do this is. No, no, no. I'm like, okay. You know, we'll see. It's all fun and games now.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. The whole thing is it's terrifying to me to be described. Anyway, this next thing, this is also in the technology here. You know, we're talking about this genetically modified food and GMOs and all these different things. I mean, the newest thing is the never browning apple, which, you know, this is sort of a PR sort of thing for why GMOs are great, because they're able to sort of modify stuff. Like, man, apples used to go rotten. This apple will never go rotten, like a Twinkie. It lasts forever. Like, now what do you got to say about GMOs?
Yeah.
I don't know about this, right? No.
So it'll never appear to be rotten, or will it ever go rotten? I think that's the difference. Like, so the apple never spoils? I could bite it and I could eat it 2 weeks later? Like, I don't, like, what do you say?
How does it break down in your stomach?
Exactly.
You just go sitting there never breaking down? It's not biodegradable?
Right. thank you.
And the point is it like, is it extended? Is it never? Like, and what is that? Yeah, all that. I don't like any of that. None of that can be good, right?
Man, no, thank you.
I'm so anti-GMO. Well, the thing about GMOs in general, it's tricky because a lot of it's been used, you know, obviously on growth and then how to expand growth and things like corn and other things like that. But there are some. I am interested in it when it comes to meat to a certain degree, and I'm not exactly like you see all these. You see the ones where they make the meat in the lab and starts to shoot a drop, bloop. It grows and they grow all the cells, and it's like it's a hamburger.
No,
and you flip
you.
It, and like it's like it tastes just like a burger.
No, thank you.
Like that. I mean, that's the future. I mean, you know, there are steaks or all this other stuff. Like, I'm interested in that. I don't know that I'm ready to eat that, but I think that is some interesting solutions.
I mean, I like the thing that I could pull from it that I like is that the potential for scientists, for futurists and technologists to figure out how to cure hunger, you know, by, you know, shifting the way we approach food. But I mean, I don't know if that's even plausible or possible. But I mean, I guess the experimentation aspect of it is what's kind of cool. But I don't like, we talk about, you know, the flip side of the coin. Like, yeah, the usage of it could be awesome, but what about the devastating effects of it? Like, we don't know all the consequences of this technology.
Right.
And so I think that part scares me, because obviously we need food to live. It's our sustenance. I prefer a more organic lifestyle. So something that's scientifically engineered in a laboratory, as using that as my sustenance, no thank you. That's my position.
And you put that over, you know, growing a sheep in your backyard and having lamb chops or whatever, growing a cow, you know, like, you know, giving breeding cattle in your backyard and then having your own hamburger. You prefer that to like growing one in a mall, because I mean, that's the best way to go.
Right.
I mean, it's the best way to go. That's what Gordon Ramsay does.
Right.
You know? Yeah. You know? And that's the best way to go. And you see that. But, you know, what is the answer there? Because I don't know. I'm with you, but I'm not really trying to, like, you know, grow my own chickens and cows and sheep in the backyard so I can eat. But I don't know. It's interesting. Your boy Tim Cook is really trying to get his Steve Jobs on. And I think it's, you know, I think that the difference between Steve Jobs and Tim Cook is, obviously, we talked about this before, is, you know, Steve Jobs was more of a, seemed like a forward-thinking innovator. He's more of an Edison, and Tim Cook is more of sort of a forward-thinking businessman. And I don't know that it makes one better than the other. It definitely makes one sort of, you know, I mean, you think of things, Edison more differently than you think of, say, you know, I don't know, Carnegie or someone else like that. But Tim Cook is, you know, he's growing the business, and he's doing a great job as a CEO, and he expects to have Apple's services business double by 2021. In other words, Apple Music and iTunes and all those things, like where they're making money off the services part of the thing, not the electronics part, is going to double. You know,
I think a cool factoid is that they're close to just that, like you said, that segment of their company is close. That one segment is close to being in the top 100 for the top Fortune 100. Companies in the world. Just that one segment.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. It's like on some Google stuff. That's kind of what Google's doing with Alphabet. You have like five different companies and like the top five in Forbes or the top five in, you know, and Apple's doing something like that. That's when you know, you're diversified. It's kind of Facebook's doing a similar thing with Instagram's its own thing and like that's doing its own stuff. So, I don't know. I mean, good for them.
I mean, I agree with you in terms of Tim Cook not necessarily being, a groundbreaking.
He's not Thomas Edison.
Yeah, he's not the most innovative guy. But in terms of, you know, him being able to, you know, receive the baton from Jobs and take it, you know, this far, I think he's done a remarkable job. I mean, a few F's though on the grade card, you know, with the Apple Watch.
Yep.
And I mean in three straight quarters of, you know, declining iPhone sales and
iPad
sales.
Is it declining or flattening though?
Declining.
Okay, I bet they're flattening.
Well, I mean, there's no, it's declining. It's not growth. It's going down.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm looking for Apple to provide us the newest technology, like the groundbreaking technology. That's what Apple's known for. So I don't know if it could be done under the supervision of him, of Cooks, you know? So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. Well, next, getting into some of our nerd talk, my boy Ben Affleck has decided he is no longer going to direct the Batman solo movie. His official statement on there, like, it's just too demanding to do both.
Right.
You know, of course, insiders are buzzing saying that Warner Brothers, who originally gave him the keys to the castle, do whatever you want, are now taking some of those keys back. You know, they have a couple rooms in the castle after Live by Night, you know, kind of flopped. Justice League, I mean, obviously, Batman versus Superman didn't do as well. That wasn't his fault. That's a Zack Snyder thing. We all recognize that.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Affleck's had a pretty good run of three sort of Oscar caliber movies as a director.
Yeah.
His first three movies are three home runs, one Oscar, and then his next movie was a flop, although I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. So what do you think of this? Do you think this is Ben's decision or is this Warner Brothers' decision? And what do you think of this?
I think it's Ben's decision. I think he is a highly successful actor, director, producer, writer. And I think that he knows, you know, what properties he can enforce, you know, his creativity and multiple options. And I think he's realized that this franchise or this property is a little bit more strenuous and challenging to be able to, you know, like dutifully execute them both at the highest level. So I like the fact that he can recognize that and take a step back. Like, hey, I'm just going to use my acting chops on this one,
right?
And source, you know, some really dope directorial talent that can make this film the most amazing that it can be. I like the fact that he can put his ego aside and say, hey, no, it's about the integrity of this property of the film and the integrity of me as an actor. I love that.
I do too. I think it's also a smart move on his part because that's too much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's already the pressure of can he be Batman?
Right.
That's
hard as hell.
It's already pressure. I thought he did a great job in Batman vs. Superman. Like, yeah. He's got a turn and obviously he's already done filming Justice League. So now he's in the solo Batman movies. This is a beloved, beloved character. Like, he's really going to take this thing seriously. He's already like got him and his guys writing, you know, a lot of it. He's producing it. I think the notion of him directing it as well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. So I like the idea of him giving that to someone very capable, picking someone who's very capable of making a dope, you know, or touring a dope movie and letting Ben be a fucking movie star.
Right.
Let him be a movie star for once. Because he's never been able to quite do that with effectiveness in a long, long time. And the accountant wasn't exactly Bourne Identity, although I like that as well.
Right.
So, I don't know, but I think there's a lot riding on him, given the accountant was kind of like lukewarm.
Yeah.
And Batman or Superman was lukewarm. Right. Live by Night was a failure. There's a lot riding on this. He's been through this before, where he was at the top of his game and made like four or five flops.
Peaks and valleys, man. So, everyone goes through them.
I don't know. I'm absolutely care. I'm rooting for Ben. I like Ben a lot. Like, I I'm rooting for him, so I think this is a good decision. Whoever ever it was.
Yeah,
I'm sure Warner Brothers was very happy.
If it was Ben's, WB's, or it was Mutual, I think it's still a great strategy for them.
Cool. Our guy Prince, music is finally coming to Apple Music and Spotify. Thank you. I mean, it was only on Tidal for a while. It's been very difficult for me, especially when he passed away. I was trying to get all of his music. I had to go on Tidal, which is fine, but I got switched back and forth between apps to listen to stuff. But, you know, I'm glad this is happening. This seems to be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the estate of Prince thinks it's a good thing too. They're able to monetize, you know, his intellectual property.
Yeah.
So I think it's good because Prince fans obviously are Apple Music and Spotify subscribers, so to be able to have it on all platforms, I think it's good for everybody.
And then, do you think? I mean, speaking of that, like, how are you? Are you on all the platforms? Are you on Tidal too, or are you kind of just on Apple Music?
No, I'm just on one. Like,
okay, you're out, yeah.
Wait, like, why would I need to be on all of them?
I don't know, because Beyonce record comes out.
I mean, there's other ways to get the Beyonce record.
I know. You'd be visiting China and stuff. I don't know. I don't know how to do all that stuff.
I could just buy the record. Like,
yeah, that's true. Like, that's a good point.
It's 10 bucks.
I know. That's a great point. I just feel like that, like, because I'm already subscribing. I, you know, it's like going to a buffet. You want to get your money's worth. I want to have like 15 pieces of pizza. I want to make sure I'm getting all my money's worth. I want to pay extra for another pizza. I'm already getting a buffet.
You know, but do you employ that philosophy with your TV viewing habits? Or do you subscribe to everything?
No.
Like, so I don't understand. Right. I don't understand the argument for it.
You're right. It's a good point. I'm just curious about the about Tidal. I'm sure you know. It's curious about Tidal. So Powerless is coming. It's a new show on NBC based in the DC universe, sort of a comic take on Gotham City. It has my guy, whose name I can't remember from, who played Alan Turk, who played the robot in Rogue One, as Bruce Wayne's cousin or brother. Anyway, he runs a firm that it's basically a workplace drama. It's like Office Space meets the Office Space, and the Office meets Justice League. And it seems to be okay. I just feel like the shtick is going to get kind of old. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this? Have you seen it?
I've read you know, just some preliminary things on it. I mean, it's not really wetting my whistle. Like, I don't think I don't think it's going to be a hot property. I think it's kind of lukewarm, to be honest. You know,
right.
Concept-wise, I think it had the potential. It has the potential to be dope, but in terms of just the way it looks and the casting of it, I'm not all the way sold.
Okay, well, I'm not sold at all.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. What I am sold on, and last but not least, before we get out of here, is I am sold on.
Ooh.
What?
I'm playing.
My boy John Wick is coming back.
So you're a Keanu fan, huh?
J-Dub 2.
I never knew you to be a Keanu Reeves fan.
First of all, I'm a huge Keanu Reeves fan. I'm a Keanu Reeves apologist.
Stop it. Stop it right now.
That might remind you of a little movie called The Matrix.
Right.
Okay,
a movie that his acting chops were superior.
I'm not talking about his acting chops. Here's the thing about Keanu. He, you know, as an action star, I mean, look, you can't front on Keanu as an action star. Like, he has whatever he's got is just enough to do the thing. Like, you talk about the Stallones and the Schwarzenegger. What do they got? Muscles and a one-liner. He's got, like, you know, I mean, like, Speed, he was great. The Matrix movies, John Wick. I mean, John Wick, come on now.
No, John Wick is dope.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it. It had great entertainment value. We had talked about this a few weeks back. My disagreement with you is I'm not running to the theaters to see this.
What?
Like, I'll watch this when it's streamable, but I'm not going to be standing in line to watch this movie. I didn't see John Wick, the first one, in the theater.
Oh, I've got some people to kill. Oh, I'm an FBI agent. Point Break, come on now.
Man, stop it.
Keanu is cold-blooded as an action star.
Okay, you cast him for your movie.
I will. Point Break. I am an FBI agent. That's my Keanu. All right.
However, with that that property, the fact that they might turn that into a television show, I think that's very cool.
It's very exciting, a prequel, because you wonder about this guy who, when we meet him in John Wick 1, he's retired.
Right.
And he is,
happened before that?
And, you know, people don't realize that Keanu Reeves is not young. He's like 52.
Right.
So what was his age, you know, 20 to 50, like?
Yeah. What was he doing?
There's a lot of material there. Yeah, so
I think that's a dope concept. But I think to have something that's serialized and episodic, I think that would be a way better sell than it just encapsulated in a one-off, in a movie, you know?
How do you feel about your boy Common as an action star? Common be trying to do some action movie. Common thinks he's an action star. It's like the third movie where Common's like, probably like the fourth movie I've seen Common.
Yeah, he was in that. That's right.
He was in some other joint where he was like...
The one with Alicia Keys. What's the one? Alicia Keys was in there.
Oh, that's his first one. Smoking Aces.
Yeah, Smoking Aces.
So that was his first one. He was action chops were not that great in that one. But... recently, he was in that one thriller with my dude from Taken.
Yep.
He was in that. He was in he showed up in a Suicide Squad.
Oh.
Yeah, as a gangster.
Okay.
That Joker. And he's like, yeah, Joker, I didn't mean to disrespect your girl. Which a whole scene that got cut out. This is a whole thing. But he's in it, in the movie still, but it's a whole arc that got cut out. But he's a fellow high-powered assassin, and I was watching some behind-the-scenes stuff, and, you know, they talked about all the training they had to go through, and Common was in there doing the training and doing all the stuff.
I mean, Common's an athlete, so that part doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely got the build and the athleticism to be able to do, you know, some of the stunts and whatever and some of the choreography. But him as an assassin, I love Common.
You're not buying it?
I'm not buying it.
You're not buying Common?
With his glasses.
The glasses on.
I'm
not buying
thank
it
you,
but
thank
he,
you.
But he's at least got to be having the same acting chops as Keanu Reeves, right?
Oh.
At least. Well,
that's you're killing your argument. So you're aligning Common with Keanu Reeves?
No, I'm just saying because he's going head-to-head with Keanu.
Wow.
Can he hold his own with Keanu Reeves? Not like he's going head-to-head with De Niro or Denzel, you know?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm excited about this movie. I'm excited about Common. I'm not mad at him, but I don't quite buy him as an action star yet. He's not quite there. He's inching towards his star turn as an action star. He's inching toward his Vin Diesel moment. I don't know if he can carry a movie. We'll see how he does in this one.
Oh,
yeah. But, you know, you working? Afraid so. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man. That's terrible.
Anyway, I digress. Okay, that's all I got for you. Anything else you want to mention?
Oh, nah, yeah.
I do. I do have something I want to mention. New Edition was fantastic, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so let me run this question to you. So we have the Jacksons, we have Temptations, we have Five Heartbeats, we have Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Is this killing any of those?
Oh, it's kill. I mean, it's up there. Some of those are theatrical. Some of those are TV. And some of those are biopics, and some of those are not. I think this is definitely up there in the, if you're talking about the black male group movie, this is definitely way up there. I mean, the Jacksons is pretty good. Because this is sort of, I live this very specifically. These guys were
you
all
live the Jacksons too.
I was alive.
Don't get it twisted.
I was alive for a lot of the Jacksons. I don't know if I lived the Jacksons. But you know, all New Edition dudes are like 2 years older than me. So like, you know, they're my age essentially. And so I'm very, very.
It was nostalgic for you.
Yeah, I mean, every bit of everything I saw, I remember everything. So that
I thought that was great.
Yeah, and I was shocked at how much I did not know.
Right.
Like, I didn't know any. Like, there's so much I didn't know in the behind-the-scenes stuff and how they're willing to sort of do that warts and all portrayal because they're all involved.
Right.
You know, pulling guns in Mexico and all that stuff. It's like, that's crazy. So I loved it. But I did want to mention Mahershala Ali's speech at the SAGs. I thought was one of the most eloquent, amazing speeches I've seen, like,
ever.
ever.
Yeah,
well, it was this strong. I saw it in real time, so maybe I'm like making
it was just great.
Like the moment was really swelled to that moment specifically, and he took it. He took his time. He took a breath. He looked around. He got emotional. He was very eloquent. I thought that was like. That was an all-timer.
It was dope.
Yeah, that was an all-timer. And props to Moonlight. Shout out to Moonlight. Great movie.
I forgot my man's name. Stranger Things speech. Did you see that one?
Oh, you talk about the Duffer Brothers dude or the which one?
No, the main actor.
Oh, yeah. I forget his name.
He killed
the sheriff, right?
Yeah, he killed it.
He's dope. Yeah.
But the speech, though.
Yeah.
The speech was amazing.
Yeah, no, he's... I like that, you know... I mean, the SAGs aren't the Oscars, but... You know, people really. This is a warm up to see what's going to happen at the Oscars. Because I feel Oscars are watched by a billion people,
right?
So I feel like Trump's going to hear it like on a worldwide stage.
I hope so.
Everyone's going to go up there and say something.
I hope so.
So we'll see. If the SAGs and the Golden Globes are any indication,
right?
You know,
and Taraji's speech was really great as well.
Yeah, man. And Hidden Figures, man. That movie was a delight.
Yeah, it was great all around.
I finally saw it, and I really, really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, all
across the board.
Yeah.
Good, strong acting, strong everything. So, all right, that's all we got. We can get out of here.
We out.
Where can the people find you, sir?
Man, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can I find you?
The same Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braz well, and sometimes on Snapchat, JK Braz, but not really a lot lately. We will see you all next week, and 2 weeks. Oh, who you got Super Bowl? Go.
Come on, man. Atlanta.
Okay, cool. Me too. All right. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.